We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. willpledge.org. Now here's your program.
Forty-three, 26 degrees in Urbana. Good afternoon. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. When one thinks of National Geographic, two things likely leap to mind: exploration and photography. When the first meeting of the National Geographic Society took place in 1888, photography was not on its founders' minds. But with the encouragement of Alexander Graham Bell, the Society's second president, photography began to play a prominent role in the Society's journal, National Geographic Magazine. The first photograph appeared in 1890. In 1905, the magazine featured 11 photographs of the capital of Tibet. The following year, the magazine contained 74 images of wildlife taken at night. It was just the beginning. That snapshot of National Geographic history comes from a new book from National Geographic. It is the largest single volume of their world-renowned photographs. It holds 450 photos selected from the National Geographic's image collection, a collection that contains more than 11 million photographs, some over 100 years old. And some of the photos here in this volume have never been published before. Within its 500 pages, you'll find photos documenting exploration, wildlife, people and culture, science, and climate change. Maura Mulvihill is the director of the image collection. She and her staff played a critical role in pulling the book National Geographic Image Collection together, and I'm pleased to have her as my guest this afternoon in this portion of the program. Thank you so much, Maura.
Oh, I'm happy to be with you.
Would you tell us about the role Bell and his son-in-law played in bringing photography to the pages of the magazine?
Well, you know, it was a pretty controversial decision to use a photograph. That photograph you referred to is pretty boring and shouldn't be very controversial by today's standards, but they felt it was really important to bring the world and all that's in it to their readers. And when they published the first photograph, we had a number of members of our board resign and others threatened to resign. They considered it not scholarly enough for a scholarly journal.
Well, now, what role do the photographs in the National Geographic's image collection play in the research, the mission of National Geographic today?
Well, you know, I think, as you say, we became known for photographs, and known for photographs that tell a story. I mean, our magazine is not just about pretty pictures. Our photographs are there to educate, yes, to delight, but to educate and show our readers the world or further explain a principle that's hard to imagine without the photograph. Really educational, but as you can see from this book, also breathtaking.
Yeah. National Geographic photographs have documented the expeditions to the poles, the deep sea, and out into space. Has the approach to documentation and what to document changed over time, and if so, how?
Well, you know, I think our mission remains the same, but the technology has provided us with new tools to show more, to show things differently. I don't think the mission to show the world things that you can't see with the naked eye, whether it's through macro photography or space photography, that mission has remained core. But I think what has changed is our ability to show you things that you wouldn't have been able to see with black and white photography or glass plate photography. So the technology has really helped us enormously.
Do photographic assignments differ today from those decades ago?
Well, remember, at one point in time, we actually published photographs that we found from around the world or people sent to us. That was in the early part of the 20th century. Later on, we began sending photographers out in the field. And I will tell you that our photographers today may say they don't get as much time in the field as they used to, but we still spend an incredible amount of time in the field, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks. So I would think that has remained pretty constant, at least over the last 50 years. years that we're sending the photographers out and we're just willing them in every way possible to bring back the very best.
What would you list as the most important contributions of the photographers who have worked for National Geographic?
Well, you know, they're all wonderfully skilled, but I think what sets a National Geographic photographer apart is their passion for a particular subject. It is the passion, whether it's for, you know, environment, science change, or a part of the world, that they are experts in that subject. They're not just great photographers. Their photographs are trying to convey to all of us their expertise. That's the difference, the passion and the desire to educate.
Yeah. You mentioned glass plates. The first color photographs published in the magazine were autochromes. What was involved in the process of making an autochrome?
Well, obviously, you know, I've heard that there's someone today, actually, who continues to make autochromes, but it was the emulsion itself was a potato starch, and it was actually applied to the glass itself. And it was, you know, a light-sensitive medium, but you can imagine the delicacy of an emulsion that is sort of a vegetative medium on glass. And the processing of that was equally difficult. The other issue with autochromes, and even though they're gorgeous, they're beautiful and the colors are incredible, you couldn't photograph motion because they were light sensitive but had no fast ISO associated with them. So the subjects were very still. Thus, you couldn't get animals in motion or people dancing. That was one thing with the autochromes, which gives them that sort of painterly quality as well.
Yeah, painterly quality. That's a really good way of describing them. It was very fascinating reading that part of the history of photography and the National Geographic in this volume. Here at the close of the first decade of the 21st century, what equipment are National Geographic photographers using today?
Well, you know, we have really, in 2006, I think our editor said we were about 50% digital cameras. I think today it's got to be about 99% digital. So we are out in the field with the most advanced and sophisticated digital cameras and lenses. So the great news about that is we can capture very low light situations. Even better for the photographers, they get to see the results of what they've taken immediately. In the old days of film or glass plates or black and white prints, you'd send the film in and sometimes the photographer wouldn't get home for 3 to 4 months to see whether they had actually captured what they hoped they had captured. So now the photographers are right there. If they didn't get it, they can shoot it again. So their ability to bring back the images and to show us these images has just increased exponentially. So yes, they're using the very high-end digital cameras out there in the field. And yet I think some of them miss film a little bit. You know, there's a certain resolution, just like we're looking back on the autochromes now and thinking, weren't they gorgeous? There's something about film that you can see the difference, I think. Maybe I'm just old-fashioned.
I learned here in this volume, I think it's in a piece written by Michelle Delaney.
Yes, from the Smithsonian.
Yeah, that in the 1960s, some of the photographs in the collection came close to being destroyed. How close and how were they saved?
Well, you know, I would like to say they were all saved, but, you know, at the time that was done, people looked at the collection as being dated. You know, we won't be using these old pictures of Africa. They were taken almost 40 years ago. So it was a natural thing for libraries to cull, and they were sort of directed to start culling and throwing pictures out and began with the first letter of the alphabet, A. We had a wonderful photographer, Kurt Wenzel, Volkmar Wenzel, who began to quietly come in and with an agreement with the woman who was responsible for the culling, take the photographs out of the trash and bring them home. And so he actually saved a large portion of the archive, and he was a wonderful gentleman, just died recently, and his wife has willed back that collection to National Geographic with the promise of safekeeping.
Yeah. The image collection contains more than 11 million photographs. How was it decided what to include in this volume?
Well, as I said, there's a lot of passion among the photographers, and there's actually a lot of passion among the editors, too. There was a lot of arguments that went into how to do this book and how to select the pictures. And I will tell you that not everybody got their favorite picture in, and I, for one, missed one of mine. But what we did is, as you said, we're known for exploration. We're also known for natural history, people and culture, science and climate change. So that was a pretty easy agreement. We could make four buckets. And then we decided that we'd arrange each bucket chronologically so the reader could see how we were able to capture more and more and different as the technology changed. Then the hard part came. We tried to pick the very best images from each time frame. So you're in the black and white prints, and it's the natural history section. The very best to show exactly what we were able to do in that time frame on that subject. And I would say that's when the passion over first choices erupted. And in the end, I think we came up with the 400 pictures. We're all happy what's in there. But I will tell you that certainly no one in the group, of which there were five, six, seven of us, got every picture in.
Yeah. But I can hear a smile in your voice. You're pleased with this book. And you have every right to be, because it is just gorgeous.
Oh, I love it. I mean, it's for me, I've been here 30 years. It is all the beautiful work the National Geographic has done, and I hope it's just preserved for all posterity. It's really it's a record of the 20th century, the beginning of the 21st, and the last part of the 19th. So it's a wonderful record.
What's here that hasn't been published before?
Well, you know, there's a lot of pictures, obviously, or maybe not obviously, that haven't been published before. But one section I particularly like is at the end of every one of those subjects on people and science and culture, we would do a special portfolio in an area that we, you know, feel like we're particularly strong in. And there's a lovely set of photographs from Paris in black and white. And I think those images are stunning, and we have so many of Paris. And most of them have really never been seen before. They reside in our archive, but I think besides the archivist and a couple people here, no one has ever seen them before. Mm. So I think that's a great example of and we have many more like that.
What's it like to have the job that you have?
Well, I think by now you probably realize, I think I have the best job in the world.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not much of a photographer, and I'm a terrible artist. But I will tell you that I've always loved photography and art, and I've spent so much time studying it. And just to sit in this job and have the talent that comes through the doors of National Geographic show me what they've done and tell me the stories behind what they've done, it's the best job ever. And I guess I feel with this book, I've let you kind of look at my job.
Mm.
You know, this is my job, and I get to share it with you.
Within all the holdings, is there a particular special collection you find yourself most drawn to?
Well, you know, I think we talked about it actually before we went on air, and that is the autochromes. We love the magical quality of them, these 15,000 glass plates and these subtle tones documenting a time in color when no other way to do it was around. And we have one of the largest collections of everywhere in the world. I think if I had a collection, it would be the autochromes. They're just beautiful, and there's nothing else like it.
And is there one particular photograph in this collection that you like the best, your favorite?
Well, it's like having a favorite child.
Right.
You know, some days one makes you angry and the other makes you happy, and this one makes you happy other days. You know, every day if you look at this book, I think you'll be like this too. There's a different picture that jumps out at you, and that's the one you like. One that certainly I've always loved is that beautiful picture that Nick Nichols took of Jane Goodall. She's bending down to Juju, a chimpanzee who's been in captivity for, I think, many decades, and she's bending her head down in a very deferential, respectful way, and the chimpanzee is reaching out so delicately to touch her hair, and it's just, to me, just heartbreaking, you know, and I think kids don't try this at home. It's her ability to communicate with that chimpanzee and Nick's ability to capture it. It's on page 502-3, and I think that remains one of my all-time favorite photos.
That's a wonderful photograph. Maura, thank you so much for talking with me this afternoon.
Oh, it was my pleasure. I was happy to do it.
Maura Mulvihill is the director of the Image Collection for National Geographic. There is a new book out now from National Geographic. It is the largest single volume of their world-renowned photographs. It holds more than 400 photos selected from the image collection, a collection that contains more than 11 million photographs, some over 100 years old, and some of the photos here have never been published before. It's 500 pages long, and you'll find photos documenting exploration, wildlife, people and culture, science, and climate change.